This is the Inside Slant Football Podcast, brought to you by Jayhawk Slant. We go behind the scenes to bring you the inside scoop from Les Miles and his staff, the KU players, and recruits. Here are your hosts of the Football Podcast, Randy Withers and John Kirby.
Hey everybody, this is Randy Withers. Welcome into another football only and game day prepper edition of the Inside Slant podcast from Jayhawkslant.com. We have some great guests lined up. We're going to hear from Joe Cashin, the voice of Coastal Carolina football, who will join us along with KU linebacker commit Demarion Alexander. We're going to talk about the upcoming game, touch on some recruiting news, and give our predictions. But before we get into all that, let me welcome my man, John Kirby. John, how you doing tonight?
Good, Randy. What's going on, man?
Not much, man. Just so I am so fired up for football. For, you know, obviously we've got the Chiefs game against the Texans Thursday night, and then KU plays Saturday night. We've got high school football on Friday night. I really, like a lot of people, I wasn't sure we would ever get to this point with the pandemic and everything. I just wasn't sure we would see football this year, and now it's like it's all going to happen in just an absolute deluge at the same time, and I'm so excited to be so overwhelmed.
Doesn't it feel like it's been 2 years since football has been played?
Yes. You aren't kidding.
It's just been a long off season. And then, you know, I know you and I follow a lot of the high school football in the Kansas City metropolitan area and the state of Kansas. And since last Thursday, you know, now you've even had some more of the big districts jump in and decide they're going to play now. So it's good to see everybody back in the fold. And, you know, hopefully we start seeing some normal football, you know, our normal schedule, you know, with a little bit of Thursday night mixed in, then you got Friday night high school football and then NFL and college on the weekend. So, hey, let's hope we're getting back to some normal times a little bit.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And a big part of that, like you said, college football on the weekends and getting back to some KU football. I'm really, really excited after not getting to see these guys at all, obviously during the spring and fall camp being shut down to where we didn't really get a chance to look at them. I mean, we're kind of walking into this thing blind. I mean, everybody knows about Puka Williams, obviously, but other than that, I mean, this might be the most mysterious or unknown Kansas Jayhawk football team I've seen maybe in my lifetime. How about you?
Well, Randy, I think you get a lot of that, not just at Kansas, but everywhere. It's just a little crazy how, you know, everything's the Zoom calls now, okay? And, you know, KU's done a great job. Their media relations, Andy Eich and Dan Beckler and those guys have been phenomenal with getting us.
They've been fantastic.
You know, getting us on the Zoom calls and getting us some content and some interviews, which is not easy right now. You know, there's no face-to-face interviews, but, you know, you didn't get to see practice. And a lot of people were like that. So, like you said, there's been some mystery in this. And I guess that's what makes this coming Saturday night more fun. You just sit here and say, hey, just get to the game. You know, no more hiccups, no more positive tests. Let's just play some football and you're ready to go. But like you said, you know, I think there is a waiting period that everybody's gone through saying, hey, we just want to witness with our own eyes what this thing looks like.
Absolutely. And we're finally going to get to do that on Saturday night. Coastal Carolina, you know, they're coming back to Lawrence to try to pull the upset. The Chanticleers going for the second straight year trying to come into Lawrence and get a win against the Jayhawks. To get a closer look at their program, you talk with Joe Cashin about the Chanticleers program and exactly what they've got coming in this season.
I'm joined by Joe Cashin, who is the great voice of Coastal Carolina football. And I got to tell you, last time I talked to Joe, it was last year about this time. And I remember he was dealing with a hurricane. And now, Joe, we've got COVID to deal with. How you doing?
John, every time I talk to you, some sort of calamity has befallen us. I mean, what is going on? I mean, I appreciate that introduction. And, yeah, it was Hurricane Dorian last year that was coming up our coast, and we didn't really know. I didn't know if I was going to have to react to that or even be able to come to the ball game, being in the National Guard here in South Carolina. Fortunately, we just got the brush, and by Friday afternoon, it was all systems go for us to come out there and play. And, of course, as you mentioned now, it's COVID-19, you know, who are we going to have to play? I mean, who are we going to play against? How many KU guys are available? How many of our guys are going to be available? I mean, this is just, it's pretty insane, isn't it? You know, we're going to try to play a football game Saturday night, though. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, here's what I think. And next year, it sounds like these two teams are going to play again. Next time it's going to be at Coastal. So maybe next time when we do this, we're just going to be talking under normal circumstances.
What would define normal?
Great question.
And if you come to Conway, Myrtle Beach, you and I will grab a bite to eat somewhere under normal circumstances, and hopefully we won't have a hurricane bearing down on us, and we've outlived all the other stuff that's going on. But I'm really excited that we were able to at least pull this game off in one of the two locations. Obviously, KU was supposed to come to us, but with everything that happened and scheduling getting turned upside down, it was great that I think that, you know, the ADs were able to, you know, put their heads together and get this thing, at least in Lawrence, nowhere else, and get a game on this year, so, and keep the series going.
Well, Joe, I wanted to start off. I listened to Jamie Chadwell. I listened to him on his call yesterday, and boy, you could tell he was just a little on edge talking about being tested on Wednesday and then Monday and Friday and who's going to be available and who's not. You know, how have they handled all this COVID stuff in the Coastal Carolina program?
It's a roll of the dice, you know. You just don't know. You're hoping as a coach. You know, you're hoping as a – and coaches, you know, we were talking a little bit about this before we went on air. Coaches are control freaks. They you know, they are in charge of the situation. They've got to know everything all the way down to from the top to the bottom of the program, who's doing what's going on, who's available, who's not, what are we going to do, where are we going to – you know, all of those kinds of things. You throw this out the window with this COVID stuff, because if somebody comes up hot, somebody turns up positive, and like you say, we will test per Big 12 protocol three times this week. We've already done it yesterday. You know, this being Tuesday, we've already done it once. We'll do it on Wednesday. We'll do it again before the guys get on the plane on Friday, get a rapid result test back, and if somebody comes up positive, they're not going. And then from the positive, I mean, that's when you start the contact tracing stuff and hope it doesn't. I hope that doesn't affect and bring in other guys that can't go. So if I were a coach, if I were Jamie right now, absolutely. I'm sweating this one out, you know. I mean, you want to take a full complement of guys to Kansas. We need every warm body that we can get, you know. We need all the talented guys, all the guys, no matter, you know, where they are, you know, how good they are, whatever. If they're, you know, they're good enough, they're playing college football. They're good guys. We can play and win with them, but we need them all. We need all these guys, and hopefully they're, you know, doing the right thing. They're, you know, adhering to protocols. They're, you know, staying distant. They're wearing their masks. They're doing what they've been asked to do, because we've actually started back in you know, classroom setting this week. You know, had been, you know, just the virtual, you know, distance stuff, but now you know students are, you know, migrating back into the classroom. So, you know, how's that all going to go? But you know, I get where Jamie's coming from. So it's pins and needles this week to see who gets on that charter.
Well, I want to start with quarterback. I heard the coach say yesterday they've got an idea who their starter is going to be. He said he may not announce it publicly. So I guess what I want to ask you is, talk about who could start and then what the difference between the quarterbacks are who are in the running.
I think you could see Fred Payton if he's back 100%. Now, of course, I know he's, you know, Jamie's mentioned the fact that, you know, he's been out with a sore Achilles for a while. He'd been out and missed a lot of snaps in fall camp. But, you know, Fred started the game out there on KU last year and then had a pretty solid football game. You know, I think he's the better thrower of him and Bryce Carpenter. I think he's a better passer, perhaps. You know, Bryce can throw the ball pretty well. He's also got some pretty good legs about him. He can run the football really well and runs the option well. Fred does it too, but I think Bryce might have a little bit of the edge there, where Fred might have a little bit of the edge in the passing game. So I think you can see two. And Jamie has never been bashful about playing two guys. at quarterback at any one time in a game. I mean, you know, you definitely, I think you'll see both, at least both those guys take snaps. And the third guy, the wild card, I think you could see might be Grayson McCall, a redshirt freshman for us. I think, you know, from what everything Jamie's telling me, I mean, this youngster has, you know, he has a lot of potential to be a great one at Coastal. So, I mean, literally, if I were to say today, I'm thinking Fred will start, but I'm about 100% sure that you'll see Bryce Carpenter out there some, and you could also see Grayson McCall. I mean, it's just your first game, and with everybody, you know, all the stuff that's gone on in spring, or, you know, obviously with the spring, the stuff hitting, and then, you know, moving all into fall camp, and, you know, you just don't really know and get a really good feel of what you got with everybody, but you think you fairly do now. You have a pretty good idea about who's going to, you know, bring what to the table. I think any of those three guys, but if it were me, I'm thinking Peyton's going to get the start.
You know, break down the rest of the offense. Who's back? What do you like about it? Obviously, I know the running back's talented and has put up big yards, but tell me about the offense.
C.J. Marable went for 148 last year at Kansas, scored one on the ground, caught one in the air. I think he's an NFL kind of player. Senior, I think if he has a big year this year, he will play on Sundays. I really like him a lot. He's a threat anytime he touches the football. And had a big game last year, went for over 1,000 yards, 11 touchdowns, averaged just under 90 yards a game. So I think we're going to want to get him the football. Isaiah Likely is another guy that I think can play on Sunday. He will line up at a tight end, but we'll move him out some off the line of scrimmage. He had 32 catches last year, 5 scores. He is a tremendous talent. I mean, he's got hands that are just phenomenal. He may have the best hands on the team. You know, a guy can get open, pretty big guy, at a, you know, 6'4", 255, and he can get open and make tough catches. Javon Hiley's a wideout for us. He's pretty good. He's a junior, our leading receiver in terms of catches and total yards last year. I think we're going to try to want to get him the ball. And, you know, up front, it starts with Trey Carter. He's a terrific offensive lineman for us, senior out of Alabama. He leads that group up there. And we've got some experienced guys coming back up there with Antoine Loper and Steven Badoski, who will start at right tackle. Steven got hurt in the Kansas game last year and missed the rest of the year, but we're glad to have him back. So, you know, I think when you see us, you know, move the ball around, if we're going to, you know, get it in guys' hands, it's going to be in the hands of Marable. It's going to be in the hands of Likely. It's going to be in the hands of Hiley, and let those guys go to work. We also have a couple of guys, you know, running backs. Jamie really likes our depth at running back. Reese White, he's back this year, sophomore running back. Went down with mono last year, and he lost a lot of weight, but he came back at the end of the year. He was a force for us. The kid from Independence Community College right out there, close to you guys, Shamari Jones, he's a JUCO kid. He might be a bulldozer kind of guy, 6'1", 220. So if I had to highlight some guys I think will have their hands on the ball, those guys would be the ones.
You know, I want to switch over and move to defense. Joe, last year it was one of the most bizarre transitions from week to week that I've ever seen covering Kansas football, but Kansas scored 7 points against Coastal Carolina last year. They turn around on their next game, they go on the road against Boston College, and they put up 600 yards and 48 points on the road. So, you know, I'm trying to figure out what was Kansas offense really last year. Was it the Coastal Carolina? Was it the one in Boston College? But Coastal Carolina's defense really did a good job. You know, talk about their defense. Who are their guys back? And what do you think about the defense heading into the season?
Yeah, first that Boston College game. I remember that was a Friday night game, and I'm sitting in a hotel waiting for our game on Saturday, and I pull this game up, and I'm like, I said, is that the same team that we just played 6 days ago? They are just killing BC out here, running a whole bunch of stuff that I didn't see at all against us. That was the craziest thing I've ever seen. You're exactly right. But guys that I think will stand out for us, have a great chance of standing out. We'll start with Teron Jackson, our 5-technique defensive end kind of kid. He was a first-team all-conference last year, number 9 out there. He is really, really good. Good kid, good player, good all the way around. He's going to be a force to deal with. 3-technique guy, defensive tackle, C.J. Brewer. He's a run stuffer in there. He's another senior. He has a chance to play on Sundays as well. He's an all-conference kid, second team last year. He's a really good one. Our linebackers, I really like these guys on the inside. Teddy Gallagher, Silas Kelly, those guys. Silas Kelly was our leading tackler going into last season. And then he went down with a knee injury in that Kansas game. We lost him for the year. So I'm hoping that, you know, with everything that's gone on this spring in terms of rehab and being able to find doctors and facilities, that, you know, we feel good about where he is right now. But, I mean, for anybody who got hurt last year, you know, and had to do some serious rehab, it was tough. But, you know, Silas Kelly's a tough one. He's an all-conference caliber kind of player. You know, he was honorable mention in 2018, so I like him. Teddy Gallagher's a tough kid in there. He's a senior. I like him a lot. He'll make some plays for us at the mic. And then kind of an X factor on defense that we kind of got back this year that we had 2 years ago is a kid named Jeff Gunner. He was first-team All-Sun Belt as a redshirt freshman 2 years ago and then transferred to NC State for 2019. Unfortunately for him, it did not work out there, and then he made some overtures about wanting to come back to Coastal. He transferred back to us at the end of the semester and got immediate eligibility granted by the NCAA. So we're going to have him as our, you know, starting bandit as it projects Saturday night. So, I mean, you talk about some guys already that we had, and then we get him back, who was all-conference 2 years ago. You know, I'm really excited about our front seven. I mean, these guys, it's going to – if our defense will be successful Saturday night and throughout the year, it will, you know, the guys I just mentioned, those guys will spearhead that effort. And then on the back end, we've got some, you know, newer kind of guys out there, and they will have to you know, they'll earn their keep Saturday night against KU's wideouts, and we'll see if they can hold up their end of the bargain. I like their talent. You know, Alex Spillum, Braden Matz will be our safeties. You know, those guys played solid for us last year. Derek Bush will be one of our corners, and then a JUCO youngster by the name of DeJordan Strong. He came in for spring and won that job at the other cornerback right away. So we'll see. You know, I like how our defense played in that Kansas game. We got some big stops late in the second half, and we're able to hold on to win because of our defense.
Well, last year Coastal pulled the upset on the road. They're going on the road again. You know, how do you see this matchup between the guys? And if you've got an early prediction, do you have one out there you want to throw out?
I'll tell you what, John. I'm just happy we got to game week. I mean, this has been the wildest, weirdest time to try to prepare for any of this stuff, to try to look at guys, not, you know, looking at Kansas and trying to scout them out, and then looking at the news to see if another shoe has dropped before even
I know.
What the game, you know. It's just been the craziest thing. But I think there will be more offense involved in this one. I really think now that, you know, Brent Bierman is now the OC. I know he got elevated into that spot about midway through last year, you know, for Kansas. I think they'll do some things differently against us than what they did last year. I think quarterback is what they're going to have to figure out. You know, I mean, Thomas McVitie, I think, threw one pass last year, and I don't know they have a whole lot of experience otherwise other than him. But they can figure out who, you know, could be that quarterback to get the ball to, you know, to Puka Williams, to get it out there to Andrew Parchment. You know, that guy scares me. I think he could be – I mean, that kid is a really good football player. Stephon Robinson, they get the ball in those guys' hands. I mean, we're going to have to play really, really – good. We're going to have to be well, you know, sound on defense to kind of slow them down. But I think I feel good about there being more points on the board than 12-7. I'm not really going far out on a limb to say more than 19 points will be scored, but I think you'll see a lot more offensive fireworks. And in terms of a prediction, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I hate kind of getting into the prediction business. What I will say is an interesting aspect of this game is, and I was talking with someone on another hit earlier about this. You know, what is the atmosphere in that stadium going to be like with no fans? You know, how are these teams going to generate any sort of excitement, any sort of enthusiasm? You know, I know KU is at home. They're in familiar surroundings. They're in their stadium. There's not going to be anybody there. I mean, it's going to be like watching BYU and Navy the other night. I mean, that was just a strange feel, a strange atmosphere. You know, how are those kids going to react to that, and how do they develop – and try to, you know, generate their own excitement and energy. That's what I'm interested to see in this football game.
Well, Joe, like you said, I think we're all glad that we're just going to get a chance to see some football, and I hope you have a safe travels up, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right, John. Thanks so much for talking to me and having me on.
Joe is a great interview and knows so much about Coastal Carolina. Kirby, I know you had a chance to be on the call with Coastal coach Jamie Caldwell. What were your takeaways from their head coach?
Well, Randy, two things stood out. Number one, I think he really likes his defense. And number two, I think he hates coronavirus testing. I figured this out, and it didn't hit me until I had a chance to talk to Joe. And when I saw Louisiana Tech Baylor, that Louisiana Tech had gone like, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks, and there's only like one or two positive tests, and out of nowhere, the week they play Baylor, they've got like 30 positive tests, right? Well, I figured this out, and I heard this finally, and it made sense. When the Big 12 teams are playing out-of-conference games, like Oklahoma State and Tulsa were supposed to play, that's being pushed back. The opposing team has to test to Big 12 rules 3 times a week. That's what they're doing in the Big 12. Well, you start taking these teams from the Sun Belt or Conference USA or some of these smaller conferences, they're not all testing 3 times a week, okay? So now when I listen to Chadwell on his call, it all made sense once I started hearing a little bit more after his call. These guys are testing 3 times. Well, they usually don't do that. So they tested Monday morning, they tested Wednesday morning, and then they're going to test Friday morning. So these guys are on pins and needles a little bit, thinking, what are these tests going to come back like? Who could end up being positive that you have no idea is, and who may not even be able to get on that plane and go to Kansas on Friday night? And I think, you know, look at Louisiana Tech. I know they're talking about, you know, the storm that came through and they had to deal with that. But at the same time, I mean, you go from 2 or 3 positives, which is what they said, they had to 30. I think when you start testing 3 times a week, I think some of these numbers start coming out. So you could really tell. I don't want to say he was annoyed by it, but it was definitely different for him to be testing 3 times in a week. Back to the other thing that I talked about that really stood out. He likes his defense, and he likes his front four. He likes his linebackers, and I think he thinks they're going to be pretty good. So that was what I took away, and this whole testing thing is new to those guys.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about some of the players that he's got on his defense, and a lot of people were very excited to see who was going to be some of the headliners and some of the names on the Kansas depth chart that finally was released on Monday. When you saw that, I mean, were there anything that surprised you or really stood out in your mind?
Yeah, the first thing that probably brought a smile to my face, because a kid that we've talked to over the last 3 years, Denzel Feaster, and I mean, he has just been, he's great kid, great interview. He's gone through so many ups and downs with injuries, and just to see him back and earn that spot. And listen, we've heard all through fall camp, and I kind of heard outside of the interviews that we had that he's looked really good. He looks healthy. You know, the kid's been playing college football for, you know, ever, and he hasn't got a chance to show what he can do. So it was really nice to see that depth chart come out. And you know, Gavin Potter, I think Gavin Potter's got a chance to be a good linebacker. And, you know, I think it might be good news for the linebackers that he's running second team right now, because I think that means there's two pretty good guys in front of him. So that stood out to me. The other thing, you know, good or bad, you know, place kicker. You know, they've got to find a place kicker. That'll win or lose you games. And Liam Jones and Jacob Borchler are in there right now battling that out. And even as we do this podcast, I've asked around, and I still don't have any clear answer on who's going to win that competition. You know, freshman that made that depth chart, Karan Pruntney, talented, true freshman corner.
Yes.
You know, tall, long guy. You know, he wins the job there for week one. Bryce Cabledew, I've heard amazing things about him. I have heard a lot of things about him, and I'm hearing them from more than one place, which tells me this isn't a fluke. This isn't a kid that just put together one good scrimmage or a couple good practices. This is a kid that has looked good through all of them. I kind of heard that he's got a nasty disposition about him, plays with a little bit of attitude. And then the young wide receivers. I think that when you look at it, you know, Emmett Jones is one of those guys. I don't think you're ever going to worry about what he has at receiver. You know, whether it's this year or in 3 years, you always feel he's going to find guys and he's going to find quality receivers. And I have heard a lot about the young kids that are behind them, and they're even good enough to possibly push some of these kids. Are they going to beat out a Parchment or a Stephon Robinson? Probably not. But they are good enough that these guys just can't relax and think they've got the starting job won. So those are some of the things that stood out to me on the depth chart.
John, before we get into the game breakdowns and predictions, I want to touch on where things stand currently with recruiting and what's left at this point, because my gosh, they've got nearly an entire class worth of kids already committed at this point, and maybe take a little bit of a look ahead then to the 2022 class. What are you seeing, kind of where are things right now?
Yeah, Randy, you know, Jarrell Boykin's a defensive tackle out of Louisiana. He's one of the guys left on the board. You know, there's not many spots to go. Maybe two at the most, depending on what kids may want to jump in and what don't. He just did his virtual tour last Sunday with the staff, came away really impressed. He's still got some SEC schools and some people that are on him, so it's going to be a fight. I know Texas A&M is in there pushing really hard. Jaden Jones, an outside linebacker from Dallas, he is a kid that I love. He is underrated. I think Rivals is probably going to take another look at him. Right now, he's a high two-star. I think he's definitely a three-star kid. He's put on weight. He's about 6'5", 235. He looks the part. And he's got some explosion, some athletic ability. He will make his announcement here within about 2 weeks. I did forecast him to KU. I don't know that he's made any commitment, any decision yet. He says he is not. I just feel good about Kansas in this one. I know Colorado's in there and Washington State's in there as well. But I'm going to go with the relationship that he's kind of built with Uzo Deribe in there. And then the other one is John House. And, you know, I've said this all along. There's one school that changes this. He's a safety out of Tennessee, is Michigan. And if Michigan ever decides to come in and go after him, I think that changes the whole game. That's where I think he'll go. And I've said this on our message board over time. I really felt it's Nebraska or Kansas if Michigan doesn't come in. The only thing right now is we're recording this podcast. Just some of the things I'm hearing and getting a feeling of. You know, there's a sense that Nebraska may have moved out in the lead on that. And so, you know, House is a kid. Randy, I think they're done with safety, but you take House if he's there. You know what I'm saying? He's one of those guys that, Hey, we're good. We've got our board filled, but we've been on House forever. We love the kid. We think he'll be a great fit in our program. So if he wanted to commit to Kansas, you absolutely find a spot. And if he doesn't, then I think that shuts it down. I think they're done with safety. And, you know, you talk about what's left. I think one of the big things when you go back and look at this is it's not just what's left. It's hanging on to what you have as well. So, you know, they recruited these kids to get them committed originally. Now you almost have to re-recruit them here in these final 3 months before signing day to keep them committed, because there's going to be other colleges that come after these kids, and they're going to have to fight them off, and it's going to happen. I mean, it's the way of recruiting now, especially in the crazy world that we're in now with, you know, you can't visit campus and you don't get a lot of game film like you used to. So I think there's going to be some colleges out there that make a run at these recruits, and you never know who KU's going to go make a run at that might be committed somewhere else. So I think that's a big thing that we got to watch is, you know, hanging on to the guys who are already on the board.
John, talking about the situation, and obviously, I mean, like you said, this is an unprecedented year. No coach, no staff has been through anything like this. But even with that in mind, when you're talking about recruiting kids out of high school, recruiting college players, what's harder for these coaches? Is it harder to get the kids' commitment, or is it harder to keep it, in your opinion?
Oh, I've always heard two things. You know, I've always heard that it's almost equally as hard to keep them committed. You know, when they put this early signing day in a couple years ago, I can't tell you how many college coaches just breathed a sigh of relief, and even athletic directors, because they save money on their budgets. See, what happened, Randy, before the early signing period hit, what happened was you'd get these kids committed, right? They'd come in on their official visits in late November and December, and you'd get them committed. And then what you have to do was you'd have to worry about finishing up your class and the kids who were going to also, the recruits who were going to come in on their visits, official visits in January. But January was also spent flying around the country securing the kids that you already had committed. So
I've heard defense. Almost.
Oh, absolutely. You're playing defense. So I've heard from so many people in the college football business that you have no idea how much money this new signing period save just on travel alone, because now you don't have to jump on a plane the entire month of January and keep flying back to that kid who's been committed to you to secure that he is committed. You've already got him signed. So now you can just focus on that, you know, that next little group of guys. So, you know, that early signing period changed a lot.
I know you've covered recruiting longer than anybody in our area and been on the KU beat for more years than you probably want to admit to. But I've always wanted to ask you that question, and it's cool to get that kind of insight. We're going to wrap up the recruiting segment with a special guest. KU commit linebacker Demarion Alexander joins us now. Kirby's going to take this one on the studio line and let you hear from one of the real stars of this incoming recruiting class.
Thanks, Randy. I am joined now by Demarion Alexander, who is a talented outside linebacker from Texas who committed to Kansas last month. Demarion, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic.
Thanks for joining us. You know, I know you guys have been back at practice and now you're getting some games under your belt. How does it feel after just this COVID-19 thing, the coronavirus, to be back out there playing football?
The biggest thing for me is just being back with my teammates. That's really the only thing that I miss, like being quarantined that whole couple of months and just sitting in the house all day. I just really enjoy being back with my guys. That's really the most important part to me.
You know, I want to turn back the clock a little bit. You know, you gave your verbal commitment to Kansas, and that came after, you know, you were committed to Minnesota. And I want to go and talk about the relationship you've got with Chidera Uzo-Deribe before you committed to Minnesota, during that time, and even after. Just talk about how much you guys stayed in touch and the relationship you had.
He respected my decision 100%. Like, hands down, he respected my decision. But he stuck around. Like, that's the thing about Kansas. I've learned that they just, even though, like, you're going to go a different direction, they're going to stick around and they're going to try to keep their relationship tight with you because you never know what happens. And you see, you never know what happened. And I decommitted and now I'm committed to Kansas. So I'm very grateful that he stuck around and kept that relationship other than a lot of other colleges that just disappear.
When you opened your recruiting back up and you started thinking about where your future home could be, you know, just tell me, I mean, did you know at that time, hey, Kansas is a school right there at the top of my list?
Absolutely. But I was also talking to a couple other colleges that I was trying to fill out, but I knew Kansas was going to be the one.
When you came down to making that final decision, what were some of the reasons you look back and you chose Kansas?
First and foremost, Les Miles. We know his name. We know what he brings to the table. He brings that winning mentality, and I think that's why a lot of commits have committed to Kansas, because of Les Miles and what his resume, it speaks for itself. And he's going to bring a lot of wins to this program. We're going to change this program around. But really, Coach Les Miles, he really drew me into Kansas.
All right, they play a 3-4 defense. How do you see yourself fitting in this defense, and what position do you see project to down the road?
A hybrid outside backer that can play the run, rush the passer, and also drop in coverage. Like I say, Kalavon Chaisson said it the best. Like, I speak three languages. I can rush the passer, I can play the run, and I can also drop in coverage. And I don't think you can beat that.
You talked about Les Miles, his effect on the program, you know, that what he's built up, he's going to the Hall of Fame. Talk about the other recruits that have also chosen Kansas, which we've heard that same reason from them. How tight are you with some of the other guys committed? And talk about that.
Oh, we real tight. Like, we got a whole Snapchat group chat, and we, like, talk every single day. And it's like we're trying to build that brotherly feeling before we even get on campus, because a lot of us haven't been on campus and we haven't even seen each other. So social media has been, like, played a big part of that, so we can just get to know each other a little bit better and stuff like that.
you know, kind of a big picture question here. Where do you see the Kansas football program right now, and where do you think it can go in the future?
I see it making strides right now, but, like, we're not even close to what it's going to be because new head coach just came in off a fresh year. We're moving in the right direction, especially with recruiting. Like, you can already see a jump in the recruiting already. From the recruiting, I think we're just going to keep going up from here on.
All right, DeMarin. Hey, I've taken up enough of your time. I know you're just getting out of practice. I really appreciate you coming on. I will definitely be in touch down the road, and good luck this season.
Yes, sir. Appreciate that.
That kid has a really special and make an impact once he gets to Lawrence. Kirby, here we are. First prediction of the season. Give me your final take on the opener against Coastal Carolina, and how do you see this game with the Chanticleers playing out?
Well, Randy, I always look back to last year's game, and I'll tell you, it's really one of the top mysteries for me of KU football that I've covered over the last 20 years, because Coastal Carolina held Kansas to 7 points, okay? And the following week, the following game, Kansas goes on the road, okay? I mean, listen, hey, everybody's thinking they're going to Boston College and they're going to get run off the field after losing to Coastal Carolina. And they go out there and put up 48 points, and I want to say it was almost 600 yards of offense. And, I mean, they don't even look like two different there's two teams from two different universes, right? I mean, you got this team against Coastal Carolina. They can't even score more than 7 points, and then they go out and play an ACC team who just beat Virginia Tech the week before, and, I mean, they run them off the field. So I went back, and I kind of studied some of that Coastal Carolina game. And Kansas tried to play that game in a phone booth. I don't know what the game plan was, but, you know, they were in fullbacks and 22 personnel. And you know, I think they thought, hey, we can line up and we can run the ball. And they did run the ball successful. I want to say Khalil Herbert and Puka that game averaged about 6.5 yards a carry between them. But they only scored 7 points. The passing game wasn't as crisp as they wanted it. But when you go back and look at that and you say, okay, what in the God's name changed between that Coastal Carolina game and Boston College? I'll give you my theory on that. Although Brent Dearman wasn't the offensive coordinator technically at that time, I think somebody went to Brent Dearman and said, okay, what we did against Coastal did not work. You get in this offensive room and you start helping put some of your thumbprint on this. And when we go to Boston College, we want to look totally different than we did against Coastal Carolina. So when I look at this game, I do think Coastal Carolina has some nice players up front in their front seven. But if Kansas can spread them out, Kansas has enough weapons that I think Coastal Carolina is really going to have trouble slowing them down. I think there is no way Kansas scores 7 points. If they do, I'm giving free six-month memberships to everybody. Well, don't hold me to that. Maybe I should take that back. But
I was going to say, maybe pull back just a little bit there, John.
Well, I'm just saying, Randy, the matchup in this thing, if Kansas does what I think Brent Dearman's going to do offensively, they're going to score points. So, you know, we heard from Joe. He did a great job of breaking down Coastal Carolina without getting too much into their personnel. On the flip side, Kansas defense last year probably played its best game against Coastal Carolina. They were great. I mean, I know Mirabelli had some yards, the running back, and he's back this year. And you know, they do have some threats here and there, but Kansas has better football players. And I think with what Dearman will bring out there, I like the Jayhawks in this one. As a matter of fact, I like them enough. I'm going to go 34-17 Kansas over Coastal Carolina is my prediction. Now, and we'll alternate this during the season, give me your take.
You've got them decisively over the Chanticleers. And I, you know, as somebody that watches this program, I have faith in what Brent Dearman has done offensively as the coordinator. And I'm like you, I expect them to come out of the gate strong. I think that there is an opportunity to put a bunch of points and put up a bunch of yards. But I will say that this Coastal Carolina defense, led by their big-time pass rusher, Taron Jackson, and their linebacker, Teddy Gallagher, that front four, or front seven, excuse me, is really strong. They showed last year that they could limit the offense, that they were able to hang in against Big 12 caliber players. I think that Kansas, though, has been able to upgrade their personnel. I think they are more settled in what they want to do. I think Puka Williams is a difference maker at running back that is going to go out, and I feel like this may be a game that he makes it his personal mission to make sure the Jayhawks don't slip again to a Sun Belt team. I think we see we might see the Kansas offensive line struggle a little bit with that Chanticleer front seven, but I'm like you. I think eventually they end up getting them spread out, the points go up, and they're not able to stem the tide. I'm going to say a little bit closer than you. I'm going to say 38-24 Jayhawks.
Well, we're both in the same range. We're not too far off.
Nope. I think we both kind of see it about the same way, and I hope that that's not, you know, just us having been talking to each other long enough about this game that seemingly has been, we've been waiting forever for this thing to get here, that we may have talked ourselves into it. But either way, you know, I want everybody to get some good sleep, get in a good night's sleep, get some good rest between now and that 9 p.m. kickoff. It is going to be a late night in the booth for Kansas Jayhawk fans. I know we are, speaking for you, we are ecstatic to finally have football again, and we can't wait to get this thing kicked off. That'll do it for this edition of the Inside Slant pregame podcast, previewing the Jayhawks home opener against Coastal Carolina. Keep your eyes open and be on the message boards and on jayhawkslant.com looking for the next edition and all the news coming through the site. We will talk with you again soon.
This has been a podcast from JayhawkSlant.com.